Welcome to Ordinary Life on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM with your hosts Kitty Doyle and Emma Kiriakou. Hi, Kitty.
I didn't even get to say my name. Charming. Well, what? That's just charming, isn't it?
Hello, Kitty.
Oh, that was very professional, Emma. Hello.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I'm impressed.
We're not having fun with Parkinson's today. We're going to talk honestly about other stuff, the ups and downs of life with chronic illness. And today we're here talking with your husband, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yeah. Good to have you here again. You've been on before, but this is the first time with me and Kitty, eh?
Yeah, I have to live with him every day.
So, Ordinary Life is brought to you by Cover Yours, your trusted insurance broker. From quote to claim, they're in your corner. Contact them on coveryours.co.nz.
That's so good. You should do that all the time.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I
like
will.
That.
So that's formal stuff. And we usually say we're not medical experts, but
we're still not medical experts.
Yeah, we're still not medical experts, but we know stuff about life with stuff.
We do, and Mike knows an awful lot about life with him.
Yes.
And it is true. Although you say you're not medical experts, you do now know an awful lot more about your own ailments than you ever thought you would want to, isn't it?
So yeah, so true.
You end up picking up so much, eh? Yeah.
Yes, you really do. Mike, do you want us to give us a little brief discussion?
Or in case you weren't watching
recap. What's happened with you and
we have met Mike before, but it's been a long time ago.
Not only do I live with Kitty and observe her Parkinson's quite closely and the struggles with that, one would say I wanted to outdo her, so to say. And
it's not a competition, Mike. And, or it is.
On the 18th of October 2020, so that'll be 5 years in a fortnight, I went from being Mr. Hoorah, charge around, I'm invincible.
Mr. Do not come between me and my work.
I had a sudden cardiac arrest while riding my motorbike at Manfield Racecourse. Now, fortunately, I was on the track, so there were lots of people watching me, and I had just over 30 minutes of CPR. In the middle of a field. And the AED, fortunately, they had two on site.
What's an AED, Mike?
An automatic emergency defibrillator. So you'll see these yellow boxes appearing. In fact, there's one not far from the radio station here in Mahara Place, Waikanae. So they are basically, if someone suffers a cardiac arrest, you can phone 111, they'll send you the unlock code, and they basically try to shock the person's heart back into a sinus rhythm.
Oh my gosh, it's kind of like an old beep situation, isn't it?
I'm not saying anything at this point.
Then St John's turned up, and the defibrillator in their ambulance was able to return a sinus rhythm to me, and I was then transported to Palmerston North Hospital, where I was put in ICU, and once they got me settled in there, my family were told that I would have a 2% chance at best of survival.
Wow.
And if I did survive, I would need permanent 24-hour care for everything. So things were pretty grim. So I was in ICU for 3 days, spent all that time in a medically induced coma, and then I came out and was moved on to one of the wards. And for me, none of this happened. One moment I was riding my motorbike, which is my only memory of that day. And my next memory was I felt really awful in hospital, and I was mid-conversation with Kitty and my children, and all I could think about was going back to sleep. I was so exhausted. So, 10 days just vanished.
Wow, you were out for 10 days. You have no memory at that time.
None whatsoever.
And what was going on for you at that time, Kitty?
Well, I'd...
Sorry, Mike.
I'd gone along to be a dutiful girlfriend and like stand at the side and go, oh, there's my boyfriend. He's so cool riding his motorbike. And And then I noticed I'd actually bumped into a person that I knew there, and we were chatting, and I was taking pictures of my, you know, hot boyfriend on his motorbike. And then he went round, and I started talking to her, and we noticed that the race had stopped. And so that's a bit strange. And I knew, like, I just knew immediately. Mm. I saw the bike in the middle of the field. It was quite a long way away, but I knew it was his, because I knew that he would have come and told me that he was okay straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to go check that he wasn't back at the station, you know, where they keep the bikes, because we thought, I've got to be really, really certain before I cause a fuss. And the next, yeah, cutting a long story short, I got taken out there, and the first thing I thought was, but we're supposed to be going out. You know, I saw this prone figure on the floor, and his skin was the colour of, like, it was grey. Mm. You know, they talk about your skin turning grey when you're devoid of oxygen, but it was that gunmetal grey. And I thought, if he survives that, they're doing CPR really well. But, I stand there and watch that in the middle of a field without the proper equipment was something else. And I do remember the ambulance man coming up to me and saying, we're taking him to Palmerston North Hospital. Can you get there? And I just went, no. So thankfully I got a lift. But I sound quite glib now, but if I think about it too much, I get all teary and sad, because it was really quite traumatic. It was a
big event, eh? Mm. Yeah. So fast forward.
Fast forward. The long-term effects of this have been nowhere near as bad as first forecast, thankfully.
Mm. You definitely can talk.
So you're living with what is it that you're living with that you that caused it, the incident or whatever, the cardiac incident?
The official cause of my cardiac arrest is unknown. However, everyone who, I had been working crazy hours. I was a senior IT project manager working crazy hours on very, very stressful projects. And, so those who know me clearly put it down to stress. And when I think about what I was doing beforehand,
there's a story there about working too hard and pushing yourself to the limit.
But what did the medical people tell you anything or say anything about, like, what your diagnosis is or, give you any advice on how to deal with it? Or
Tell them what happens when you go to the doctor, usually.
The effects I've been left with is I have suspected hypoxic brain damage, so diffuse hypoxic brain damage. So if you think of my brain as rather than like a stroke where you have one part of your brain gets damaged, I've got it's like I've got buckshot through my brain. You know, little bits all through my brain have been damaged, which is why I can do everything I used to be able to do, but everything is insanely hard and exhausting. So particularly highly cognitive work. So I tried very, very hard, for 8 months, tried to get back to work. And the best I ever got was to do 6 hours in a week. And I had to limit it to 2 45-minute slots on a day. I could do that twice. Then I'd sleep for a day. Mm-hmm. Then I could do it twice, and then I'd sleep all weekend.
So the effects of being at work was just so overwhelmingly hard.
Mm. Yeah, and I was unable to do anything else.
Yeah.
Going to the shop to buy.
Couldn't even
milk.
Watch TV, or some people play video games to chill out, and that. But Mike can't do that.
Yeah, the kids would play video games, and I couldn't look at the TV because just the images on the TV. Yeah, actually made my brain hurt.
Mm.
But, it was quite painful. Yeah. So
it reminds me of like people talking about concussion and that kind of thing, eh?
So that's a bit of a problem. And the other thing is I discovered I've always had, even since I was a little child, a propensity to go into atrial fibrillation.
Can you give us a quick... What is atrial fibrillation?
Basically, your heart's made of four chambers. You've got two small ones at the top, the atriums, and two big ones at the bottom, the ventricles. Atrial fibrillation is when the top two, instead of beating at a nice rhythm, basically flutter about and, you know, basically fibrillation just means they're not beating properly. They're right. flapping around.
Oh, okay, so it's kind of lost its rhythm or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And ventricle fibrillation is when the bottom ones that actually do the pumping do the same, and therefore no blood's or very little blood is actually moving through your body.
Right. So we started to talk about the impact a little bit, but it's kind of like the main things for you is, you know, the fatigue. So, Mike, tell us a bit more about what it's like, been like dealing with the fatigue and being off work and all that at home, and you know, how do you get through that?
So for the first wee while, I used to compare myself to the of that pre-cardiac arrhythmia, and it was quite depressing.
Did you go through a kind of grief for that person?
Yes, yeah. What I found difficult, I described it to Kitty as, you know, trying to go back to work. I described it as
the train.
Yeah, as basically, if you think of, you know, my work environment as a train that would come, and it used to be I would get on the train and I was the main guy on the train. Everyone knew I was there. I was the conductor. I made everything work on the train. After my cardiac arrest, the train would arrive, and for a period I'd be allowed on whilst it was at the station, and then I'd get off. And then I would get on and, yeah, people knew me and would talk to me. And then, and then a month later I'd try and get on, I'd get on the train and no one would talk to me, and I'd just be standing there. And then it was like the train would appear and the doors would open and I'd look. And then it made very clear that I was not wanted on the train.
Right. You said to me, it was like you could look through the open doors and the windows and they'd smile and wave, but there was no room for him.
And then after a while, they wouldn't even smile and wave. The train would pull up and you'd just be standing on a station and it would leave.
Wow.
And that was my whole life. Yeah, that kind of, and it's one of, I didn't realise the degree to which when you work full time and, as most people do, how much you define yourself by your job.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it. Yeah, you meet someone new and they say, oh, right, who are you, blah, blah, blah. And a question that comes very quickly is, so what do you do for work?
Yes.
And people define themselves and they we do judge each other by the answer to that question.
Yeah, so we are very work-oriented society, aren't we?
And all that just vanished.
Yeah, and then you're like, who am I and what do I do?
Yeah.
How has this played out as you for you guys as a couple and in your family situation?
One thing is really weird is I think my cardiac arrest has actually made myself and Kitty's relationship work. Because whilst I don't understand her challenges and she doesn't understand all the details of my challenges, the challenges the three of us face and the things you talk about are so familiar to me. You've talked about drop-off. Now, my drop-off's different. I've talked about the invisible disability, and it is so frustrating, especially when you're a 6'5" strapping bloke who looks perfectly healthy, and yet you're struggling to get around the supermarket and worried about whether or not you're going to collapse with fatigue in the middle of the supermarket. It's pretty hard.
Yeah, it is really. It is a hard thing. So we can get into that a bit more, shall we, next time?
That would be great.
Yeah. So that's it from us today on Ordinary Life. it's been me, Emma.
And me, Kitty.
And me.
Mike. Big thanks to Cover Yours for having our backs. And helping you plan for the messy, beautiful stuff life throws at us. That's it, yes. Anyway.
Ka kite anō.
Ka kite anō.
Farewell.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.